welcome back to another episode of Sheer Motivation Podcast. I'm your host, Delina, and this is my girl, Tara. Hey. Me and Tara met a while back at a social event, and of course, like I, in true fashion, I'm always talking and running my yapper, okay? And we got to be talking and sharing stories, and you know, our conversations grew from there, and one of the conversations led us into the whole childbirth experience. The topic of this episode is called Guiding Light. Okay, so before we go any further, make sure you hit that like and subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode every week. If you don't have time to watch the whole thing on YouTube, that's okay. Got you covered on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts. So to press forward, guiding light is something, this is going to be an interesting topic, because if you are considering having children, if you have a daughter, a sister, a cousin, a friend, anybody that is of childbearing age, or somebody dear to you that could be reproducing, this could be some valuable information for them. So even if you're a guy and you plan on getting married or having a child or anything like that, this could be something interesting. So
that is very important for the male to be prepared.
Child, listen. So before we go any further, Tara, tell the people a little bit about, in layman's terms, what it is that you do.
Okay. Hey, y'all. I'm Tara. I am a reproductive health specialist. I am a full spectrum doula, and I help you prepare for your whole reproductive journey. So as a full spectrum doula, I don't just do births and postpartum. I start from fertility, like before fertility, when you're thinking about having a baby.
So if you're trying to put it in there.
Right.
And you need help getting it in there.
There are ways and things that you should do for your body to prepare you for the stages of pregnancy. So it starts way before. I say it starts actually when a woman gets her first menstrual.
Okay.
Is when you need to start.
Okay. Just, you know, kind of, okay.
Thinking about it and making sure that you're eating healthy and making sure that your reproductive organs are okay.
Okay. So number one, let's safeguard the reproductive organs.
Right.
Okay. So women, we should be taking our vitamins and stuff like this. I know I said this on season one, but it's real important. Keep your levels right. If you're trying to get pregnant, or if you could become pregnant, that's a great place to start.
Right.
So fast forward. Now we're pregnant. Okay. So if somebody wanted to have an extra, I guess what you would do be like an extra hand, an extra set of hands and guidance while they're pregnant, once they get pregnant.
Right. Once you get pregnant, I would recommend hiring a doula or a birth worker of some sort.
Okay.
We are non-medical professionals, mm-hmm. but we are professionals who provide support mentally, emotionally, physically, mm-hmm. by giving you evidence-based knowledge to help you during your journey. So we provide the facts for you to make an informed decision for yourself.
Okay.
So I'm sort of like an advocate, but we're giving you the information so that you can make the right choices for yourself and your family.
Okay. So now, I didn't have a doula when I birthed my children, but I did have a midwife.
Okay.
And I think I was in love with my midwife. And I told you this before. I felt like once I gave birth, she broke up with me. I considered getting pregnant again just to see her, but the relationship wasn't that serious. You know, I decided, you know. But no, so a doula is a sort of a birth coach.
Right.
They get in there and help you rock on the ball and all that, to coach you through contractions.
Comfort measures, mm-hmm. for you during your labor and delivery process.
Okay.
So it's basically a mental journey that you go on.
Oof.
So how able to control your mental, which controls your anxiety, which controls any of the thoughts, the pain is there. Like, having a baby is equivalent to having a heart attack and more.
I'll say that.
So the pain is there, but how you mentally are able to control your body mm-hmm. during these times and not tense up or mm-hmm. give in to the anxiety, it help you be mm-hmm. able to deliver your baby with lessen the pain.
Okay. And so for the male that's watching this, what is one good tip you could give the male partner when he's trying to support his wife, his fiance, his girlfriend, his little cousin, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, if that one tip you could give the male, what would you say?
I would say the one tip that I would give you is to really learn your partners or your family members kind of love language, because during labor you're producing something called oxytocin, right? Mm-hmm. You need that hormone in order for your baby to come. Mm-hmm. So the more that your partner is loving on you, and sometimes, don't get me wrong, the laboring person will be like, don't touch me, don't look at me, don't breathe on me.
I said a few things while, those type of things.
And they get really mean, but being able to try to provide them some words of affirmation, a lot of touching, a lot mm-hmm. of rubbing, really help take their mind off of the pain, which they're focused on. So kind of like try to distract them as much as you can.
Okay. So what made you get into the doula world?
So my oldest sister, she was having a baby and she was in labor and there was like not enough nurses. So the nurse kind of mm-hmm. was showing me what to do, and I kind of got my first look into being a doula. And I had no idea what it was called. I was 14 years old mm-hmm. and I just wanted to help my sister. Mm-hmm. But in 2018, I was giving birth to my fifth child at that time. It was the fourth one.
See, you can't even remember. Right, Lord have mercy.
So I was giving birth to the fourth one, and it was this lady in labor, and she had no support. And the nurses were talking about like not being able to support her, and I was so concerned about this lady and not concerned about myself for real.
So you were in the midst of labor, and you looking over, you seeing somebody else struggling, and you like, somebody need to help her.
Right. So I was just like, okay, instead of being there to support just my family, I wanted to start a business to support other women too.
Okay, that's dope. So,
yeah, but I have helped deliver 20 of my nieces and nephews. It's a lot of us, y'all. I got 15 brothers and sisters.
So. Okay. Oh, God. Next question. I'm going to come back to that. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you around birth and pregnancies all the time.
Right.
And so.
I love it.
Oh.
I love it.
You love seeing the process, or you love, well, I guess if you got six kids, you love seeing the process, being a part of the process.
Right. And I feel like becoming a doula also helped me, like, not have any more children, because I still get to love on these babies.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, because you got enough. Well, the Bible says be fruitful and multiply. So, you know, for our listeners, that might be a little bit motivation for you. Go ahead, start that family. Okay. If you're listening and you can't watch, I got my fist in there. Okay, so let's talk about that. So where are you primarily located?
So I'm located in Hampton Roads, Virginia. I serve all the surrounding cities of Hampton, Virginia.
Okay.
However, I do travel. Mm-hmm. So if you need me to go to another state, you know, mm-hmm. all you have to do is hire me and, you know, provide room and board or whatever.
Okay.
I'll be there.
Okay. That's expensive. Okay, so what are some of the most common birthing challenges that you have seen?
The most common birthing challenges, I feel like, in this area is being able to advocate for yourself.
Okay.
And really standing 10 toes down and advocating for yourself. 10 toes down. Mm-hmm. Because the healthcare system here, they kind of overlook. Mm-hmm. Especially like the black and brown community, mm-hmm. they don't really pay attention to us mm-hmm. or listen to the things we're saying. So you have to, like, this is what's happening, and make your voice be heard.
Right.
And don't take no for an answer.
Right.
And I feel like in this community, we are
so used to being looked over that it's just like, okay, well, I told them and they didn't do anything about it.
And I remember one of the things that brought me to this place, I was like, girl, you got to come up here and talk about this. Because you were so passionate. You was like, I get that they feel like African-American women have a higher tolerance for pain.
Yes.
But listen, you know, and I can understand. So for those that don't know, my listeners and or my viewers, when I delivered my youngest son, I had 3 beautiful, healthy pregnancies. I've never had any issue with blood pressure or eclampsia, anything like that. After I delivered my youngest child, totally normal delivery, about an hour after delivery, I started to get a headache.
Mm-hmm.
It started at the base of my neck. It was sort of like at the bottom of my head. For those who are listening and cannot see, it's that little space that's like where the back of your head does that little round thing, and it's right up underneath there. I started getting just like a very prominent headache. As the hours went on, it got worse.
Mm.
Every single nurse that came into my room, I mentioned the headache. They gave me some Tylenol. Mm. Then that escalated to, what's the other one? I'll think of it later. But they gave me a different medicine.
Okay.
And I would be fine for about an hour or two, and the headache just kept coming back.
Mm.
When the doctor came and checked on me, I told him the same. I'm like, I got this headache. They did send anesthesia up to my room, and they were trying to determine if it was from the placement of an epidural that I got later in delivery.
There is a thing called an epidural headache.
Right, and that's what they thought it was at first. After they assessed me, the anesthesiologist was sure that it was not. And he ruled that out.
Right.
And he did tell the nurses that were coming in the room, like, no, I don't think that's it. This went on for 2 days.
Mm.
Okay? I had a headache coming, like, back to back every 2 days. At one point, I remember telling the nurse, she was coming in, taking my vitals. I was like, my head is pounding so bad. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Mm. And she looked at me and she said, well, you know, it'll probably get worse before it gets better. And I was like, ma'am, I wore Crocs to the hospital. Okay. I delivered my son January 24th. I wore Crocs there because it was fairly cold. I had a hard time putting my foot inside the Croc. Mm-hmm. My foot were not swollen. My feet were not swollen when I went into the hospital.
Right.
After delivery, now I'm swelling up and I have this headache. Again, kept giving me medicine the next day. They said, do you want to go home? I looked at them and I said, well, I want to go home, but I'm afraid that if I go home, something is going to happen to me. I've had this headache since the day before yesterday. Every couple hours is coming back,
right,
and it's not getting better. And I told this to every single staff person that came in there. So needless to say, fast forward, they did my discharge paperwork. And I'm packing up everything. And I do remember one nurse, I'm explaining everything to her as she's doing my paperwork. And she's listening to me. And she's just kind of filling out the paper. She's just kind of listening. And the other lady's explaining stuff. She's just looking at me. And it was like she wanted to say something, but she didn't.
Right.
So fast forward, I come home. I get settled in. I'm taking Tylenol because that's what they told me. They said, take Tylenol every 4 hours. I'm taking Tylenol every four hours. And I am getting so drained. Like, every day is getting worse and worse and worse. Like, I was taking care of him. I was doing the best I could. Right. At that time, I was married. My husband had took fraternity leave, which is something they give to dads.
Right.
And, you know, he had the time it just right, but he took 2 weeks. And so, this particular day is 5 days after delivery. And he was like, I have an appointment. I'm going to come back. And then we were supposed to take our son to the pediatrician because he was born with a tooth. But that's neither here nor there.
Too.
You always got to one-up me, right, don't you?
It was the weirdest thing I ever.
Yeah.
I was like, not this baby got teeth.
Yeah, a whole tooth up through the gum. So we were going for that 5-day appointment, which typically they don't really do 5-day appointments. You may see them, I think, when the baby's like maybe 2 weeks.
So a week. So you do the next day at the releasal,
which I didn't do either,
and then you do a week.
Okay, because I know they said the birth weights of babies were struggling a little bit, so like
them.
Okay, So he goes out for his appointment. That morning I get up, I wipe baby down, get baby ready for appointment, got baby all bundled up. He's on the bed. I get in the shower and I feel a jerking on the right side of my body. I'm in the shower. My baby is on the bed. Remind you, since I gave birth, he was not there. He had already left, to my knowledge. Because he had come upstairs before I got in the shower. He said, all right, I got, our middle son was 5 or 6, and he had set him up for breakfast. He said, he's eating cereal. I'm about to run to my appointment down the street. I'm going to come back. I'm taking you guys to the pediatrician. And so I said, okay. I got in the shower, and I'm in the shower. And to my knowledge, my other son is downstairs eating cereal at the kitchen table. Right. Newborn is on the bed. And I'm in the shower. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took everything in me to get in the shower. I mean, I just assumed that I just had this baby and I'm tired.
Right.
You know, I didn't feel like myself. But at the same time, I mean, I wasn't horrible. So I get in the shower and I'm like washing. All of a sudden, I feel my right side. It was like a jolt of electricity through my body. And I start shaking really bad on just one side of my body. And my first thought was, I'm having a stroke. That was my first thought.
Right.
And I'm shaking. And the second thought was, I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. And I don't want my kids to find me in here dead. You know, that was my second thought. And so I tried to yell out. And when I tried to yell out, it was like the words wouldn't come out. And the next thing you know, I collapsed. When I woke up, and all of these police officers and firefighters were in my house, and I looked. And I'm like, I got on a dress. It was like a dress out of my closet. I remembered the dress because it was like a maternity dress. And then I just like was looking. And he said, hey, you got a big old nugget on your head. And I just went back. I just went to sleep. When I woke up again, I was in the ambulance. And when I tell you that ride was the smoothest ride ever, I'm not recommending nobody get in the ambulance, but it was the smoothest ride. I felt like I was riding to heaven. I was like, is this the end or wait? I mean, you know, that's what I was thinking. Right. And I remember they were poking and it was just a lot going on. And fast forward, I get to the hospital. She's like, it's time to put your Victoria's Secrets on. And she was stretching these stretchy underwear. And I looked and I kind of chuckled. And then I dozed off. I woke up like 2 days later. And I didn't know what was going on. So, fast forward. I spent a week in the hospital. Now, Riverside in Newport News, Virginia, was so gracious. Even though I did not deliver there, I delivered at some place in Hampton, which I won't even mention. And
this is how many years ago?
5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I delivered in Hampton and you know, I was just like, wow, I'm alive. Riverside allowed me to bring my baby in there and be with me, even though I did not deliver there. And I was in the neuro wing, and the nurses there, they were so sweet. They would come up there and visit me and my baby, and they're like, you know, and this one side of my body kept tingling and going, you know, like falling asleep. And they were running all these tests. I had no idea what was going on. And then they come back and I'm breastfeeding my baby in the room, and I see this cute little doctor walk in, and he was like, I'm Jonathan Butler, I'm from Riverside Neuro. And I was like, and I asked him, I said, am I gonna die? You know, because why is the neurologist coming in here? I mean, I know I'm on the neuro wing, but y'all running me around. I haven't figured out what happened to me. And he said, you have some bleeding on your brain on the left side, which is why the right side was jerking. So the left side of your body controls the right side and vice versa. So I had a blood clot in my brain that was trying to make its way through.
Right.
And it got aggravated. And so it sent these electric shocks, which caused me to have a seizure and collapse. And it's called, the name for it is postpartum eclampsia. Most women have preeclampsia while pregnant. They deliver. They're fine. It's very rare that you have postpartum full-blown eclampsia. I'm the thing in the textbooks, according to him, that you read about, but you don't really see that often. Right. And he was like, he looked at me, he said, you know, on paper, you're supposed to be dead.
Right.
So somewhere there's a plan for your life. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the hair just, and I just remember just thanking God that I was alive and that I had another chance. And this didn't, like, just every, you know, just like, oh my gosh, I get to be here with my baby. And, you know, and it was just a scary, scary time. But I was so frustrated because the entire time I was in the hospital, I kept saying, something is not right. Mm-hmm. I did everything except for stand up on the bed and say, and beat my chest.
Right.
Something's not right.
You literally, I tell my clients, especially in a hospital setting, you literally have to, even if you're not on the brink of death, you have to act like you're on the brink of death to get the help that you need. And it's very, very unfortunate, and it like pisses me off for real. Because why must I act like I am dying to get the help that I need?
Because you're not gonna get it.
And it really, the rate for eclampsia, postpartum eclampsia now is way higher than it was 5 years ago, especially in this area, in this community. Because one, we don't really have the tools we need to take care of ourselves correctly here. So that's a big impact. Fresh food is,
it's expensive.
It's expensive.
You know, it's expensive to eat healthier.
Right.
You know,
to get the vitamins that you need, that you're supposed to take. Not the vitamins that they prescribe you at the doctor's office. Because that's not the vitamins that you are supposed to take.
And this is the thing. I went back to the doctor in my 6 week appointment. I told him what had happened. I said, oh yeah, I figured out what that headache was. He was like, well, what was it? And I told him. And he was just like looking like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like I just told him I moved his car or something. Right. Like, and I was like, you know, I read an article that Black and Latina women are 4 times more likely to die during or after childbirth. And he looked at me and said, yeah.
Yeah. Here in Virginia, as of 2023, our rate for maternal mortality is 69%.
That's scary.
That is 5 to 6 times more than any other race here in Virginia.
That's scary. And some people may listen and say, well, I'm done having kids. But if you have a daughter, if you have a niece, if you have a cousin, if you have a sister, if you have, you know, just any, if you're a man and you have a daughter or any of those things, or you may plan on getting married or you have a girlfriend or you want children. I mean, this is scary because you could be raising that baby by yourself.
You have to educate yourself. That's the most important thing during the whole reproductive journey, is to educate yourself. Know your rights. Ask your doctor for the rights and responsibilities of the hospital. Educate yourself on their procedures. Educate yourself on your doctors themselves. And know that you can fire a doctor. You can absolutely, if a nurse or a doctor or anybody comes in your room and they're not doing what you ask them to do, or if they're refusing anything, tell them to write it in your chart. Tell them to document it. And then if they still don't, you can say, don't let this person back in your room. You're fired. You're literally paying these people to provide you a service. You can tell them you no longer want their care, and they have the right to not come in your room at all.
And what I didn't know at the time is if you're ever in labor or you're a part of someone's childbirth experience, most hospitals, they have a pound, and it's a three-digit number. Different hospitals, it may vary. Right. And you can have someone from the hospital come up
and advocate for you.
and advocate. They'll listen to what's going on. Mm-hmm. They'll get your side. They'll kind of see what's going on with the nurses. It's an extra pair of eyes and ears in the room.
And just to know, the patient advocate is not affiliated with the hospital. Mm-hmm. These are people who are contracted, so they have no obligation to
one person hospital. Or the other. Mm-hmm. Right. They're just there to see.
A neutral space in mm-hmm. the matter.
Yeah, and I didn't know that because when I delivered at this hospital in Hampton 5 years ago, they had just started doing deliveries again because they had
they were shut down.
Yeah, and I mean they were dedicating that labor and delivery wing to heart care, and then they decided to like start delivering babies again. Mm-hmm. And I will say that my doctor, when I told him, I said, "Well, I want to deliver at Centera. It's a brand new birthing wing. The
and
room's
it was so beautiful.
It was so
and
beautiful, and that's what sold.
Up.
That's what sold
they
me.
Okay.
And you know, at that time, he just. You know, suggested that I not, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, well, it's going to be fine. And it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I just was inquiring. I inquired about Riverside. I inquired about Mary Immaculate. I did have two children at Mary Immaculate. And I mean, they were phenomenal for me. But every hospital has horror stories.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. It all depends. You know, every situation is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'll say when I went to Riverside, the nurse, I remember I had a nurse named Nikki. I will never forget. And she was as sweet as pie. She was about this big. Okay. And I was like, why they send this little girl in my room? I'm about to break her in half. And she would, you know, she said, let me help you, you know, and I just remember sitting on the toilet. I'm crying. I mean, she was just so sweet. She was like, you know, she cleaned me up. I didn't get a sense of an attitude from her. She's like, do you need anything? Are you okay to walk? If you're not okay to walk, let me know. I'm going to call staff.
Right.
You know, I'm going to call somebody to help. You know, she was just so attentive.
And I
and I felt like she brought me back to life. And before I left, it was like I felt sad to leave her too. She was like, next time you have a baby with us.
Right.
And I was like, got you. But I don't really want no more babies though. But I'll keep it in mind. I'll pass the word along, but I don't really want no more because they tried to take me out of here.
Look, I love Riverside too. I had two of my children there, and it was amazing.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So, did you take vitamins after delivery?
I did. So, I recommend taking your prenatals if you're breastfeeding.
Okay.
So, to continue until you stop breastfeeding.
Okay.
Even not, at least take them 6 months after mm-hmm. you have your child.
I planned on breastfeeding, and I was. And once I had the clot, I had to be put on a series of medicine mm-hmm. to keep the clot, you know.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I had to stop breastfeeding. But, you know, I learned a lot from that experience.
Right.
And I always try to, like, tell people, like, pay attention to your body. Mm-hmm. If something don't feel right, speak mm-hmm. up. If something don't sound right, speak up.
Right.
But the biggest concern that I had was after.
Right.
Because I got a copy of my medical record.
And it didn't say.
Well, interestingly enough, the medical record stated that I have a history.
Of headaches.
A history of hypertension.
What?
And I went back to them and I said, this is incorrect.
They tried to cover their...
Somebody tried to cover their tracks. So had I died, it probably wouldn't have got really much traction because somebody would have read it and said, oh, she has a history.
Right.
So I went back to the doctor.
And this happens a lot.
Yeah.
It happens a lot. That's why also when you leave the hospital after anything, it doesn't even have to be childbirth,
mm-hmm.
you need to ask them for a transcript.
So after you deliver, you said ask them for
a transcript. Right? You need an itemized transcript. So it literally breaks down everything that happened during your stay. So any medication, any Band-Aid they opened, anything that they use will be on this summary. And then you can go back and look at everything. This will also help with your bills because sometimes they'll charge you for something that, you know, you ain't even used.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
And then you can go and talk to them about, like, you know, I never even used this.
Okay. See, I didn't know about a transcript. But after I delivered, I thought it was important to just kind of get my medical record to read over it and to just like find out like at what point did things go left? Was there something in my medical record that I should be aware of? Because I also had to go undergo a series of tests. Right. They wanted to know, is the clot genetic? Am I predisposed to just making clots? Which I went through all the testing. They drew like all this blood. I thought I was going to die. Like I was like, what are you guys doing? And come to find out, like, I have no genetic disorder that causes clots.
Right.
And I got my medical record, and I'm just reading over it and everything. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why does this say I have a history of hypertension? I've never had an issue with hypertension. My blood pressure has always been spot on.
Okay.
It was always 120 over 78 every single time. To me, that was great for me.
Right.
So why are they saying that I have an issue with blood pressure? So then that led me to keep reading. And when I went back to my appointment, I asked the doctor. He said, well, that's what Centera told us. I called Centera. And I talked to the director of nursing on the floor that day. I told her about my entire birthing experience, you know, and I shared with her what was in my medical record. And she said, oh, well, we got that information from your doctor.
Now they're placing the blame.
So now it's like this, like this, like this.
Right.
So it is, you know, you are your biggest advocate.
Yes.
You have to communicate. You have to research. You have to know what you're getting in the arena with.
Right.
I think if I were to get pregnant now, I would be absolutely petrified. And I'm nervous for my daughter.
Right.
You know, I mean, thank God that's not what's going on now. I mean, hopefully we got another about 10 years before she even think about getting pregnant. You know, she's in college, so I wouldn't want that. But you know, I think about her and I'm just like, I need to be aware of these things because I might need to advocate for her and save her life.
So educate yourself. So there is this book called Oh Sis, You're Pregnant.
Oh Sis, You're Pregnant.
It is more for Black and Brown people, but I tell all my clients to read it. Because it breaks down medical terms for you. It tells you the whole thing. It prepares you for a home birth. It'll prepare you for a hospital birth. It tells you the terminology that they're using so that you can know exactly what they're talking about when they tell you you're at station so-and-so or your E-face this much or any medical terms is broken down in this book.
I was just surprised. And I think that's great. It's called Oh Sis, You're Pregnant. I'm going to have to check that out. I'm going to see if someone can put a nice little picture of that book. Oh Sis, You're Pregnant.
Yes.
You know, that would be nice if I could get that up here. But, and that's great. Like, I wish I had access to that book.
Right.
But you'd be surprised how much the doctors don't even listen. When I was in labor, I asked him not to break my water. He came right in and broke my water.
Right. See, and in this area, I don't know about other places, but in this area here, unfortunately, at Centera, they have a new director, and she is amazing, and she has made them all take classes on informed consent, right?
Mm.
So now they're supposed to. Now, not everybody does it, but they're supposed to ask you anything before they do anything. Like, am I allowed to break your water? Am I allowed to do these things? And I say, if these things are happening and you don't want them to happen, right? Me as a doula, I see things in hospital that I know and that shouldn't be happening or my client didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just be like, wait, we need a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you step out of room so I can talk to my client? And I'll tell my client, well, you know, they're pulling out the tools right now to break your water. Is that something that you want?
Mm-hmm.
So also educating the people, your support people. Your support people are the people.
And that's nice.
That really needs to know all of the things, right? Because while you're in labor, you're not looking at, like, you in pain.
Right, and that's how it was. He was like, I'm going to go ahead and check you, see if you dilate. The next thing I know, I felt all this warm substance. And I was like, did you just break my water?
Right.
And he said, yeah, I did. And I said, why did you do that? I asked you not to do that.
Having a support person in the room is really important. Because sometimes while you're giving birth, like, you're not coherent. Yeah. You going in and out. Mm-hmm. You in pain. You feeling all these emotions. Like, things are happening. There's a point in time in labor where literally everything in the room slows down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything has happened so fast. Mm-hmm. And it's people in and out. And, like, for a birthing person, you are there to have a baby. I highly recommend having a support person. This could be your spouse. This could be your neighbor, your auntie, your grandmother, somebody that you have literally went over your whole process with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have did the research mm-hmm. so that they could know. Or they're somebody that's going to ask a question like, hey, what are you doing? Break mm-hmm. it down for us.
Right.
Let us know.
Yeah.
So that way you can make an informed decision.
Yeah. Well, she said that she's having a cramp. She's having a back pain. She's, you know, this right. is happening. Like, you guys need
and
to
a
do
lot of
something.
People are like, I don't want to be worrisome, or I don't want to be bothersome. Worry them.
That was me. Like, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna just
worry
not say anything.
Them. No. Worry them. It's okay. They can pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
Worry them.
You know, and
answer questions.
One of the things that my midwife had told me when I had my middle son was, you are the biggest advocate for yourself. And you want to make your requests and your concerns, your fears known mm-hmm. to the people that's close to you, especially a doula, a birthing right. coach, whatever you're going to use, so that in those moments when you're not thinking straight because mm-hmm. you're focused on, I mean, because let's be honest, having a baby is big business.
Right.
It's a big deal. People don't value it the way, because women have babies every day. You know, but now something is going on because more and more women are starting to die right. from this experience. And it shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't be like
this. And so my midwife would tell me, like, you're in charge. Mm-hmm. You're your biggest advocate. You have to speak up. You have to know what's going on.
Right.
And they will break your water, get you in the midst of labor, push the epidural on you so they can keep you in the bed.
So they can keep you in the bed because it is a liability.
For you to be up walking around. She want to be cute at that nurse station and flap them eyelashes and them scrubs, honey. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to all the nurses.
Right.
Don't cancel me, nurses.
However.
My daughter's studying nursing. I love nurses, but I'm just saying. There are those nurses that want to walk around with their scrubs on and talk at the nurses.
Too, they're overworked. So if you in the bed,
that's
I
true.
Don't have to worry about you as much.
That's
because
true.
Because where are you going?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a full house and it's four of us.
Right.
So lay down, sis.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see it from that perspective too.
Like, yeah. I need you to just sit mm-hmm. here. So yes, I do like the epidural. They push the epidural mm-hmm. and then it leads to cesarean.
See? Yeah. And so what I found helpful for me, I'm not a doula. I'm not a birthing coach. I'm just a mom of three. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm dropping bars again. What I found helpful for me, 1, 2, 3.
Hey.
Oh my goodness. But what I found helpful for me was to just kind of sit in that rocking chair. Mm-hmm. Keep that blood flowing, rock back and forth. I had a birthing ball.
Okay.
I would rock back and forth on the birthing ball.
That's movement.
I would get up and go to the sink and sway back and forth and mm-hmm. get those hips moving. And I would try to do those things. And once I hit 7 centimeters, I was like, baby, I can't do this no more.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I tried to keep moving for as much as I could.
Right.
But it was very intense. And I mean, if you need to get an epidural, it's okay.
Yes.
You're all woman.
You
don't need to prove it.
You know mm-hmm. what you can take. I mm-hmm. tell my clients that all the time. Although I had 6 natural births,
oh.
I have a very high pain tolerance.
Woo, chat. Right? You didn't have any epidurals.
I had no epidurals.
Oh, I'm scared of you.
I had no epidurals. I had my last baby at home. It was like, I wish I had all my babies at home. However, you know what you can take.
Okay,
you
girl.
Know what your breaking point is. So if mm-hmm. you need to get an epidural, then do that.
Yeah.
Because we want you to be okay. At the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
we want a healthy mom, healthy baby at the
yeah.
end of this. So you do what you need to do for yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? But also while you're getting the epidural, you still have to move. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure that they change in your positions every 15 minutes while you're in that bed. Yeah. Range of motion is important, especially when you have epidural.
And see, I didn't even know that.
Going side to side, changing positions, that ball between your legs, one leg mm-hmm. hiked up, one leg hanging off the bed. You mm-hmm. have to keep moving, because once you get an epidural, it makes you tired. Your mm-hmm. body is numb. So your body is thinking, okay, we are not having a baby right now, yeah. basically, right?
Right.
So it's not doing the things that it needs to do, because we high. Let's put it that way. We high. Ooh. That's what's happening. Your body is on a high.
Yeah, that state right? always. The state always.
And your baby is also. Your baby is like, oh, things like the walls are not closing in on me no more.
Right, because your body's more relaxed.
I can take a break. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? Mm-hmm. We're no longer engaged here.
So some people slow down.
So it can cause you to stall out mm-hmm. to get this epidural. But if you're constantly moving, making your baby uncomfortable, that's what you need to do, is make this baby uncomfortable mm-hmm. so your body can know it's time to get this baby out. So your baby can stay engaged and keep transcending down.
Okay, that's a good tip. I didn't even think about that. To keep moving. Even when you got the epidural, stretch them legs. You know, I got an epidural. I could still feel. And I asked the nurse, I was like, ma'am, I still feel all this pressure. She's like, oh, well, it's different ways they mix it. You know, if you're going to have a cesarean, we kind of, you know, mix it. I said, no, I want that kind. I don't want the kind.
So the epidural is to take the edge off. It doesn't take away the pain completely. It's supposed to take the edge off.
Well, I have had several friends who have had epidurals, and they was like, I was in heaven after I got the epidural.
But it also depends on your body, too, and See? What your body can tolerate. Mm-mm. Like, I know women who got an epidural and felt everything. Mm. Or the epidural didn't kick in the time frame it was supposed to, so they had their baby, mm-hmm. and then the epidural kicked.
Oh, that is so dumb.
The epidural wore off by the time it was time for them to have their baby.
Oh, gosh.
It's not a guarantee that this thing is going to work.
And then every time it rained, I feel like I still relive
having the epidural.
The epidural. I'm like, my back is not backing up the way it's supposed to be.
It's not backing. Like, yeah,
my back is my lower, my back. Every time it rained, my back is aching. But, mm-hmm. but you know, I did get the epidural, and it's not a horrible option. It's really about your preference. Mm-hmm. For me, when I got it, it did take the contraction, the intensity of the contraction. I could see them on the monitor, but I wasn't mm-hmm. feeling that intense cramp. But it was a lot of pressure. Right. A lot of pressure.
And the epidural is not the only pain management option that you have. You can take a pill. Like, it's basically like Tylenol in the IV.
I didn't do that. But I got Stadol. Stadol is that stuff, okay?
Give me Stadol.
Stadol for people that don't know.
You can take the laughing gas.
See, I didn't know that. But Stadol for people that don't know, for our people that's never had a baby or you might be pregnant, Stadol for me felt like I had 2 or 3 glasses of wine.
Yeah. So it just takes the edge off.
You know, and you can get 2 doses. You get the first one, right. And then a couple of hours later, they'll come back and ask you, do you want some more? Mm-hmm. And then after that, you can only get 2 doses of it.
Right.
And I got 2 of them. And the second time, I felt like high. I really felt great. I mean, it was amazing. I was giggling. It felt amazing. Yeah. But it doesn't last long.
It doesn't last long. You know. Just to take the edge off.
Yeah, you're looking at a couple hours of some relief there. Right.
And in this time, we advise you to rest.
Yeah.
Right? To get as much rest as possible. Mm-hmm. You can use something that's called a TEM machine, and you put it on your back, on your hips, on your belly, and it'll send you little electric pulses mm-hmm. that feels amazing.
Mm. Okay. It's called a TEM machine? TEMS. Yeah. Okay.
They normally use it during like rehab mm-hmm. For physical therapy. But it also helps during labor and delivery.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
So there's different ways, like, that you can release the pain. Orgasm is another way to release the pain.
That's what got you into the mess.
The way you got that baby in there is the way you're going to get that baby out.
Well, what goes in must come out.
So, but orgasm.
But in labor? How is that supposed to work in labor?
And not penetration. There's other ways.
Well, you know what? That'll be on episode. That'll be on the part 2. That'll be on part 2.
In early labor, you can still have penetration. sometimes the guys get weirded out, but it is a way.
I mean, that's literally like a threesome.
It is.
Oh my gosh. Three people. It's still too much. How do you even... That's going to be a part two.
Okay. I can teach you all the
way. Okay. Well, you have a lot of experience here. You got six to my three, so I will definitely listen.
But there's a lot of different things to help with comfort measures. It is.
Listen. Okay. Yeah, I mean, listen. I just... Whatever's going to get you through labor and delivery without taking somebody's head off,
right,
you know, and saying things that in your relationship, you don't want to be going home when released from the hospital single.
This is also a conversation that you need to have beforehand, right? Mm-hmm. You need to have a conversation with your partner saying like, hey, things is going to get crazy in here. It could get crazy in here.
Yeah.
Moms apologize to me. I'm so sorry. And I'm just like, sis, what happens in the delivery room, we don't hold that against you because you were having an experience equivalent to having a heart attack.
Ooh, okay? Yes, Lord. They say that childbirth is the closest to death that a woman will ever be.
That anyone. The things we do to have little people.
Yeah.
It's the closest to death that you'll get.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's those special moments during childbirth that you finally get through it. And you look over, you know, at your support system and you're like, okay, we did this. We made it. We got this beautiful little baby. Now, it's been said there's a myth that once you had a baby, you forget the pain. Now, not me. I remember very well that it was painful.
So I remember my pain. And I feel like, too, people don't talk about it enough. Like, sometimes after you have a baby, you're not happy.
Yeah.
You can literally, like, right after having a baby, you looking at this baby. Like,
Which is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Like, oh my gosh.
Like, you came out of me.
I'm right. Like, it's a state of shock, a state of awe that women go through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all rainbows and sunshine sometimes. Sometimes it's just like, I did this.
Mm-hmm.
I created this.
Yeah.
I just went through that amount of pain to get you here.
And we're reminded that yet again, we are just phenomenal, beautiful women who put our lives on the line to birth these humans. And although the world has gotten to a place where it's not as appreciated because women do it every day, we just want to take a moment and recognize people like you, our guiding lights in our pregnancy journeys, our delivery rooms, you know, after birth, because it is important. It is a special moment. It should be celebrated. And you know, shout out to all the pregnant women and women that want to have kids. It's a beautiful thing. You know, while acknowledging this beautiful journey, we also have to acknowledge that medical care is changing.
Right.
And the most important thing is to leave the hospital with you and your baby.
Right.
And so in doing that, you have to speak up. You have to educate yourself. Take your vitamins. You should be taking your vitamins. What I was told is up to a year after delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Takes 9 months for baby to grow and mature in there, and it takes about a good year for you to completely heal. So that's crazy.
And even more than that, you think about like your placenta. You deliver a placenta after you deliver a baby, which leaves the hole about the size of a saucer. If you guys can see it, a saucer.
Yeah.
Inside your body. That is what you're healing. Right? Not only is your uterus going up, your hormones are trying to
they're all out of whack.
What is staying and what is going and what we are doing. You literally have a wound the size of a saucer inside of you.
It took me 2 years to start feeling like myself again. And even then I was still It was a journey.
It's a journey.
I was losing my hair after I had my youngest.
Postpartum hair loss is real.
I was on the verge of tears. I would be holding up clumps of hair. And I remember the doctor saying, listen, it took a year for baby to get here. And it's probably going to take about a year or two for you to get back right.
Even more.
And that's like...
Some women, even more. Mm-hmm. You can have postpartum depression up until 4 to 5 years after having a baby. Your body literally went through a traumatic experience, no matter how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. For your body, this was a major traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. We got all these hormones. We went through all of this pain. We felt all of these things.
And in a matter of an hours, baby is out. So now your body is like, wait a minute.
What to do? I have, like, it takes 21 days for something to become a habit for you. Mm-hmm. You literally had a year.
Yeah.
Of creating this little human. And then.
Now we're done.
And hours were done. Right. But what are we supposed to do?
Right. So, give yourself grace.
Grace.
If you're listening to this or you're watching this and you're pregnant, you just had a baby, you're dealing with the fluctuation of hormones, it takes time. You're going to get through it. You're going to get over it. You are not alone. Because, child, listen. You are not alone. Share some good pregnancy tips, after childbirth tips that have worked for you. Drop them in the comments. This is just an episode where we want to take time to highlight our guiding lights. If you're pregnant or you're thinking about becoming pregnant, make sure you have a good support system in place. Yes. Let your friends, close family know about fears. Something don't sound right, don't feel right, speak up. Right. And remember, you are your biggest advocate for yourself.
Definitely.
And the goal is to leave the hospital with you and your baby.
Right.
And so, with that being said, this is another episode of Sheer Motivation. I hope you've enjoyed Guiding Light. If you don't have a chance to watch the whole thing on YouTube, that's okay. Put it in your ear while you're at work or driving in your car. We're on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thank you for watching. Before you leave, hit that like and subscribe button. Share with a friend. And until next week. See you later. Bye.